The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands Number 7, Dectra Chain. A mysterious stranger with important knowledge narrowly escapes Ryan's band before they can question him.
Damn, he's getting away! Who the hell was he?
I don't know. But I sure as hell would have liked to find out.
My dear Ryan, do you not realize what this discovery means?
Sure, Doc. It means someone apart from us seven knows how to use a gateway.
And before they can comprehend this new twist, the redoubt they're in is under siege by an unrelenting enemy. Water.
Dark night, this redoubt must be underwater. The place is flooding. If we don't get out of here, we're goners.
Soon the group find themselves in the remains of New England, where life has regressed to the days of whaling ships, danger on the high seas, and the use of brutal press gangs to fill out a ship's crew.
There's those as might say that to sail with Pierre Aquad is to earn thy pay with the skin off thy back, and maybe with thy mortal soul as well. I just say it's best to keep well to windward of Captain Quad, if thou catchest my drift.
Separated from his companions, Ryan finds himself shanghaied and set to work under the sadistic female captain, Pierre Aquad.
You stinking murderous slut!
I stink because I don't bother washing. I murder because it gives me power and pleasure. And the other... that thou canst find out when I need to use thee.
Never!
Oh, you'll soon learn. I have the power, the total power on this ship, Ryan Cawder.
Deathlands Number 7, Dectra Chain. 7 unabridged hours in Graphic Audio. The movie in your mind.
Deathlands Number 7, Dectra Chain, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting February 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
What would you do if you found yourself in the Deathlands? Would you join the madness or die in its wake?
My baby! My baby!
Rick Ginsburg suffered from Lou Gehrig's disease and was cryogenically frozen until a cure could be found. Then came Skydark. Now, some 100 years later, he's awakened by Ryan Cawder and his companions.
Who are you people?
Who are you, Freezy?
In the barbaric Deathlands, where mutated humans eat human flesh, can a man of our time survive? In a mad cultville like Snakefish, where the people worship snakes and call for human sacrifice, can Deathlands warrior Ryan Cawder keep Rick Ginsburg alive?
Show us the evil! Show us! The worm protects us all!
God! Why can't I just go back?
What would you do? Would you let the madness overwhelm you? Or would you become mad yourself in order to survive?
Ryan, look out!
Huh? Thanks, Rick.
You were wrong, Ryan. About killing being hard, it's too damned easy.
Deathlands Number 8, Ice and Fire.
Deathlands Number 8, Ice and Fire, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting February 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
And now, our feature presentation.
Shh.
The land was a shimmering bronze oven. The noonday sun sailed through a clear sky, etching shadows across the desert, edges as sharp as a razor cut. A lone hawk circled on a thermal, eyes searching the barren wastes below for any sign of life. It had been the clumsy movements of men an hour ago, but they were of no interest. Now the bird's attention focused on a flicker of movement near the base of one of the giant saguaros that sentineled the red-gold earth. It was a diminutive Gila monster, barely 6 inches long. The coral and black patterns dappled its stubby body as it moved slowly, legs splayed, head raised as it watched for any potential enemy. The man beside the cactus flapped a hand at the creature, which hissed angrily and spat venomously in his direction. When the hand was again raised menacingly, the lizard scuttled down a narrow arroyo toward the east, its tail snaking a peculiar pattern in the dust. The man hawked, gobbing a ball of orange spittle to his left. He was partly in the shadow of the cactus, but the sun was scorching through his thin cotton breeches. He shuffled his feet in the soft leather moccasins. His thick black hair was greased and tied back in a bandana of patterned cloth. His face was broad and flat, the eyes brown slits that stared out across the floor of the canyon toward the winding trail 100 yards off. He wore a loose shirt in pale blue cotton, tucked into a wide leather belt. A hunting knife and a sheath of tanned deerskin was on the left hip. The middle finger of the right hand was missing, and the finger next to it carried a heavy ring of hand-tooled silver, which held a chunk of raw turquoise in a rough claw setting. The man rolled his head around to ease the neck muscles. He'd been waiting for nearly 3 hours, ready for someone to come riding along the trail. Just to his right, there was a long sliver of petrified wood, its heart rich with purple and red shards of rock. The bones of Yetzo, the great giant of the legends of the Navajo. At the thought of the old enemy, the man tried to spit again, but the heat had dried his mouth. Nobody had seen any Navajo in the canyons for more years than the fingers on 10 hands. This land belonged to the people. He was 18 years old and fiercely proud of his warrior heritage, proud of being a fighting man of the Mescalero Apaches. His gun lay beside him, cocked so that the flat click wouldn't betray him to an enemy. It was a stolen rifle, a battered Sharps 50 caliber buffalo gun, its butt patterned with hammered brass tacks in the shapes of the moon and stars. The name of the young Indian was Here's Little Sees Far. References to his near-deafness, caused by a misfired cartridge in that same gun, and his keen eyesight. There was a small piece of jerky in the pouch at his belt, and he absently chewed at a strip of it. By lying still, he was conserving his bodily fluids, holding off from needing water. His pony was tethered in a box canyon 3 miles east, and there was a metal canteen tied to the blanket. It was covered in canvas and stamped with the letters U.S. and the number 7 on its side. A half hour drifted soundlessly by. The hawk gave up watching the skittering lizard, fearing the closeness of the hiding man. It angled its wings and sailed off southward, across the serrated land. There might be better pickings in the steep-sided valley where the river ran, even at the height of the New Mexico summer. Here's Little Sees Far kept his breathing steady, conserving his energy. The word around the wiki-ups of his tribe was that a lone man drove his wagon along this trail once every 7 days. The white man carried liquor on his wagon. Sometimes he would even have a white woman with him. The Mescalero youth had never had a white woman before, and his loins surged at the thought. His hand crept out and caressed the narrow trigger of the old buffalo rifle at his side.
It will be good.
He saw the dust cloud rising in sinuous curves through the hot, windless air of the afternoon. A pale gray spiral moving toward him. As good as his sight was, the young man couldn't yet make out what was at the center of the cloud. The dust soared higher, and he could make out a pair of ponderous oxen drawing a white-topped wagon. It was the one. Moving with an infinite caution, the Apache drew the sharps to him and cradled his face against the warm metal, squinting one-eyed along the sights. He drew a careful bead on the nearer of the pair of oxen, his fingers settling on the trigger. Something struck him. A smashing blow in the center of his spine, a hand span above the leather belt. It jerked his whole body, the gun dropping from his nerveless fingers. His head was thrown back in shock, eyes staring blindly into the screaming light of the sun.
His legs kicked uncontrollably, and he felt warmth around his thighs, where he'd found himself. Vaguely, in the far-off distance, the young warrior's ears caught the rumble of a shot being fired, the sound echoing off the cliffs on the farther side of the wide valley. On the ridge behind the dying Indian, a soldier rose from his crouched position, the smoking Springfield 45 carbine in his gloved right hand. It was the reliable 1873 model. The lean man beside him nodded approvingly.
Good shot, trooper.
Thank you, General.
Looks like his back's broke. Best go and finish the bastard off.
Yes, sir.
The trooper saluted and walked leisurely down the slope, drawing the Colt Navy from his belt. The rest of the troop sat on their horses, waiting quietly. All were dressed in the dusty blue uniforms of the 7th Cavalry. Their leader brushed with the back of his hand at the orange dirt on his yellow-striped breeches. He was a little above average height and as skinny as a lath. Everything about him was thin and tight. Narrow eyes, slitted against the New Mexico sun. Lips drawn like a line of ink. He had an oddly yellow complexion for a man who spent so much time out of doors, and the corner of his mouth was turned down and seamed with old scar tissue, as though from a vicious blow. Nobody ever asked him how he got the injury. Under the hat, there was a cascade of tumbling yellow hair, as gold as Kansas wheat. A brass-hilted saber hung at the officer's left hip, the tip of the scabbard scraping the earth. The afternoon was disturbed a second time as the trooper stooped by the twitching mescalero and put the muzzle of his well-used pistol just behind the right ear, taking care not to get grease on the gun. A grizzled sergeant leaned from his high McClellan army saddle and spat out a stream of tobacco juice.
Well, that's another good Indian, General.
Yeah, but killing one cub don't mean you got the whole family. The day's coming when we need to burn out the nest.
Want to bring up the dune wag for the body?
No, leave him be. Let him rot.
Want me to radio Cutter on the ox cart? Let him know what went down.
Yes. Thank you, Sergeant.
The blonde officer turned on his heel and stalked toward the rest of the detachment of soldiers. He paused from habit, checking that the Stetschkin 9mm automatic pistol with the laser night sight was snugly in its holster. The quartz wrist chron showed 7 minutes and 11 seconds before 3 o'clock. It had been a worthwhile hunt and a kill. The puckered lips parted in something near to a smile, but the smile never got within a country mile of the cold, slitted eyes. A 100 years ago, a rain of nuclear bombs obliterated civilization in a few minutes of blazing horror. It was the end of the world. Doomsday, sky dark. With the first nuclear explosion, the tissue-thin tapestry of civilization was ripped apart. The rule of law was replaced overnight with the somber, draconian edict of survival of the fittest. Cannibals hunted prey, cold hearts brutally raided farms, and slavers seized anybody they could as chattel. Electricity was seldom seen, starvation universal, rape a daily event, death the only known means of escape. This is America in the late 21st century. Welcome to the Deathlands. Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, Michael Replogle, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 6, Pony Soldiers. Night
Not far from the Mohawk River, and what had been called, nearly a century back, New York State, the summer sky was clear, but the tops of mountains still held pockets of tired snow in the shadowed high valleys. Chem clouds and virulent shades of purple and crimson